Hello and a warm welcome to the Offside Rule. Woohoo! Three ladies talking about football, behind the scenes knowledge, little snippets from the most beautiful game covered here on the show. Myself, Kate Borsay, joining you. The other two I mentioned, well, Lindsay Hooper here as ever. She had a very eventful journey in today, so we'll find out more about that in just a second. Joining her, Robin Cowan, commentator extraordinaire across the men's and women's game. There's not much she doesn't know about football, right, Robin?
I'd contest that. I think a lot of people would, to be honest. Still drying off from my journey in as well.
Oh my goodness me. Well, Robin arrived looking like a miniature snowman. She'd got her all-weather boots on. She'd got a very large coat on. And you can tell that she's been in the game of football for a while because that looked like, you know, seriously the outfit of an experienced gantry commentator.
I've been
commentator
on a gantry or
me.
Two, yes. I've been burnt before, and then you usually get a text from your mum saying, you should have taken an extra layer.
Yes.
Like Claire Rafferty, who was a bit cold in her jacket recently.
Oh, yes.
Did you see?
On BT.
Yes. She covered the Conti Cup final in the women's game, and by goodness, she looked freezing. In fact, she even joked that if it had gone to extra time,
she was going to go.
She basically
anyway.
Said to the BT Sport production team, I'm off, by the way. I cannot bear this any longer. Not just the elements, Lindsay, you've been dealing with another sort of
I was, when I set out this morning, I was thinking, oh, this is a bit miserable, I'm going to be really wet. I'd have taken that this morning given my journey in, just being a bit wet.
What did you get instead?
A man threw up on my train carriage. Not too near me, it was a bit further down the carriage
from
me, but it's the smell. It was smell, and then he had to get off, and then they had to come on and try and deal with the sick. And also, I'm one of those people, if I see someone being sick, it makes me
I'm
turn away.
Phobic. This is, I mean, I'm actually feeling a bit nauseous as you're telling me this
I'm hoping I haven't got an aroma of puke. And then just as we got into final destination London Waterloo, a lady had got a pram, and I think in the rush to try and get off the train because it smelt, misjudged as she was pushing off. I thought the baby was going to fall out of the pram. Thankfully, it didn't. Someone came to the rescue.
Well, you were poised to
To do a rugby style or a cricket style save. And then I thought, well, that's enough for one morning. Got to the tube part of the journey to get here, where we record, and a lady got stuck in the doors. You know when people try, and even though there's another train in 1 minute, they try and get on with 10 seconds as the door's going boop, boop, boop. And then her leg and her bag got stuck in, and she was like, she actually asked for help, and no one helped her. They went, oh, it'll open again in a minute.
That is London.
Which I thought,
tube.
Welcome to London.
I've just got visions of rocking up to a platform and seeing a bag and a leg stuck out of a train door, sort of squashed, and then no one helping her. But actually, I suppose she was better off to stay put, because if they'd have tried to pull her, you probably could have broken the leg, right? So she
probably is better off just to stay put and wait. Just to be a bit more patient, right?
Yeah, I think this
the wise words of Robin Cowan.
The response was probably the right one, but it just didn't seem very caring in the way it was said.
Goodness
it's
gracious,
like the doors will open again in a minute.
Yeah. I'm shocked by the London tube people for that.
We're a nice lot, aren't we? We're also dealing with coronavirus here in the capital, of course, and in the world of football as well, as all Serie A games for the next month will be played behind closed doors. In Scotland, the SPFL and the SFA have announced that their traditional pre-match handshake between players, that's been scrapped, so that's gone. Message also heeded by managers as well, by the way. Livingston's Gary Holt and Celtic's Neil Lennon debuted an elbow bump the other day before their Premiership clash. Did you see that? So it was one of those...
Well,
hello.
I prefer the ankle clash as a greeting.
There are various ways of ways of getting around it. Let's move on with today's show. Not just at coronavirus and incidents on London transport or freezing gantries, lots more to discuss. A couple of big days happening this week. You know, we've been blessed by events for this week, and we're just going to cover all of them rather than have to choose between the merits of World Book Day and International Women's Day. Both very, very worthy. We're going to do a bit of an Offside Rule take on those. A reminder, though, in the meantime, that we're on Jack Radio's Friday from 4 o'clock. Oh, You'll note the all-female lineup for our musical interludes on today's podcast as well. The youth of today, though, is our first topic. It's been a good week and a good season, hasn't it, for youngsters playing football, for promising young talent coming through. In the FA Cup, we've seen outstanding performances from Billy Gilmore. I mean, great for Chelsea, horrible if you're a Liverpool fan like me, but he was, if I'm putting my impartial hat on, an excellent upnote of that game. Eddie Nketiah at Liverpool's youngsters early on in the season too, making quite an impression. So I think we're going to celebrate the youth that's going on and have lit up the season so far. I'm going to go to Robin for your take, first of all.
First of all, you know when you do a bit of research on footballers and you see they were born after the year 2000 and you just shed a bit of a tear?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to ban talking about footballers born past 2000.
It really makes you very depressed.
We did this for the She Believes England Lionesses squad the other day and painfully had a look at who was born after 2000.
And then we opened up this topic, which has well and truly made me feel like, well, oh, me joints. Anyway...
I think the big one worldwide who has just burst onto the scene this season is Erling Braut Haaland. Can't really argue with that. 19 years old, he set the world alight in the Champions League. He scored more Champions League goals in the group stage than Barcelona for Red Bull Salzburg.
Together. He just keeps getting better, doesn't he?
He's incredible.
That's the fantastic thing about this player. You sort of feel like you've read all the plaudits about him and, you know, surely it's going to calm down a bit. But with his transfer and everything else, he just seems to keep getting better.
I think that's the thing. And he's been taken care of, isn't he? The transfer from RB Salzburg to Borussia Dortmund just seems to have been absolutely seamless. So he scored 12 goals already for Dortmund. He only signed in January. It's been absolutely incredible. A couple more for you. Brandon Williams. I've been really impressed with Manchester United, a left back, and just thinking about England, we have Ben Chilwell, don't we? Not really too many options. We have a plethora of right backs, don't we, but not really left back. And I love the comment from Gary Neville, who said Brandon Williams would eat his opponent's nose to win a game. And that's the highest compliment that could be paid to you by Gary Neville. It clearly really has taken to him, our Gary.
Seriously, do you actually measure defenders by whether they would eat people's noses or not?
Well, Gary Neville does, clearly. That's his. It's the highest compliment you can be paid. Bukayo Saka has been incredible, hasn't he, for Arsenal. Yeah. Again, really good against Portsmouth. And Lindsay, you've got one to look forward to, haven't you, for Wolves? Luke Matheson, signed from Rochdale.
Yeah, he's been brilliant. And Pedro Neto, let's not ignore him. He's been fantastic for Wolves.
Do you know Saka, 18 years old, he's been reinvented as this left back, hasn't he?
So again, sort of needs must because they didn't have one. Yeah. He's been incredible.
Great against Everton the other week. Leading goal provider in the Europa League with 5 assists in as many games, while no teenager in the Premier League has more overall in 10. So he's proving his worth at such a young age. And that's what a lot of people say about him as a player. He just seems to have immediately adapted, be immediately at home in the Premier League, which for such a young player, it's quite a remarkable thing, really.
He just seems to have that composure, doesn't he? You see some young players, they kind of snatch at things, don't they? And, you know, rightly so. It's kind of a big deal, isn't it?
Yeah.
But he just seems to be like, oh, okay, this is what's happening now, and I've been asked to do this, and he just does it.
Producer Abby's just left me a note here. She's obviously read the same article as I did in the Times a couple of days ago. Straight A and A stars at GCSE.
He's one of them, is he?
There's a really good article, actually, about him and his background and about how he was a diligent student, quiet guy, very unassuming, very excellent with the football at his feet. Lindsay.
I have been to St Andrews a few times for the BBC this year, and I've been keeping an eye on Jude Bellingham. Mm. And he's only 16, and in a couple of matches that I've seen him perform in, he was easily head and shoulders the best player on the pitch. Now, what makes him so good at the tender age of 16? Well, I think he's got a little bit of everything. If people are making comparisons in the game, people are saying that he's the next Wayne Rooney coming through. He plays in midfield. Technically, he's gifted. He's brilliant. The thing that I really like about him as well is that I think in a higher level, if he goes to the Premier League, which is being muted at the moment, or one of the top leagues around Europe, I think he'll be even better because he's that sort of player that doesn't lose possession. And the Championship can get very physical. Mm. It can get very hurly-burly in midfield. And I think when he has that little bit extra time on the ball as well, you'll see the real quality that he possesses. physically, he's only going to get better as well. At 16, he's still got growth and already he's a physical presence. So I think that Jude Bellingham is really one to watch. I've been at matches where there have been endless amounts of scouts there keeping an eye on him. I think I even mentioned and referred to that in one of my reports. So there is definitely talk around him
as well, apparently.
So Borussia Dortmund are now the front runners to get his signature. And I think the thing is, with Jadon Sancho potentially coming the other way to the Premier League, they're going to have a gap to fill.
And that's an interesting one, isn't it? Because if you call the sort of Jadon Sancho going to Bundesliga as a bit of an experiment, it has paid off and it's definitely made his game, or brought wealth to his game in terms of his experience and his vision.
I think for younger players, they are seen as a really great development club, just in case parents, you know, when you're talking of kids of this age, they might have a concern about going to the likes of Manchester United, who are supposedly interested as well. Barcelona have been mentioned.
But then it's difficult, isn't it? Because you're then having to challenge yourself with moving to a whole different country. And I would assume families move with.
I'd prefer it if the initial interest, which came from Wolves, actually saw fruit.
Was followed through,
but I think they're probably going to lose out now because of the money involved. But to give that some context, this is a 16-year-old. He turns 17 in June. Now, you can't have a professional contract in football until you're 17. So at the moment, he's still on what you would call an academy wage, around about £150 a week, we're talking. And then the money that's being mentioned to get his signature, which of course his dad is going to play a huge part in sealing that deal, his family look after his affairs, is around £30 million he's being priced at.
I just wonder if the whole Brexit thing will play a part, because once we leave the EU, the age at which players can transfer between clubs in Europe will rise. So that's an interesting one, actually, whether when we're thinking about younger talent going abroad, what sort of isn't going to be possible. I'm going to chip in with one from Liverpool here, who's impressed me so much this season. I'm positive that you guys will have seen him in action too. Curtis Jones, only 19. The pick of the bunch, really, for Liverpool. We've seen Harvey Elliott at 16, you know, lots of hair, lots of skill, very good, some very exciting prospects at the club. But Curtis Jones, for me, in terms of someone who's come onto the scene and looked instantly at home, not phased at all, scored the winning goal that saw Liverpool past Everton in the FA Cup. Scored in the next round 3 weeks later against Shrewsbury, that game ending in a draw. We know it went to a replay when the team were on winter break. He captained at the side for that replay at Anfield, the club's youngest ever captain. And whilst it's sore talking about the FA Cup, he is the highlight of the FA Cup and Liverpool's experience for me.
I think one quality as well that links all of these players, if you were talking Jones for you, Kate, Haaland for you and Bellingham, is this maturity for young players. They all possess this maturity.
Where's that coming from, do you think? Because this is, you know, this season is really interesting in terms of the young talent coming through. When you're looking at Chelsea and at Billy Gilmore and a fair few others there, Mason Mount, you know, players that have been at the academy for several years, you're perhaps not surprised, and also because of what happened with their transfer embargo, that was always going to be a given. But I think it has surprised people how many other bright young things are coming through at other clubs as well.
I think it's to do with the club and who your manager is the big thing for me, because I've seen a lot of Norwich this season, and because they just simply can't afford to buy players, they have to blood the youngsters. So Max Aarons, Todd Cantwell, to name but two, have been absolutely brilliant this season. Cantwell's penalty against Spurs in the FA Cup was just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. A rocket. Mm. You know, the confidence of the young man. Mm. So I think it's all to do with the environment, isn't it?
Dare I get slightly political with this as well and say that society-wise, I think that children are growing up quicker than they ever used to. There isn't as much play time. You know, where do they go and play? Youth clubs have disintegrated. I think about how my youth was extended when I was younger, and there aren't really those things out there anymore. And I wonder if there's this force to grow up a bit quicker. I'm not saying that that's necessarily always a good thing, but I think in a sporting arena it is. Yeah.
But also in the context of football, I think they are being taken care of better, aren't they? Because we've heard horror stories of apprentices and things what they were supposed to do.
And also, let's hope that the development of these players continues long term as well, and that they don't just peak at 20. Or at 19 or at 23 even. It needs to be about the longevity of the career. I'm going to wrap things up, so we've got to move on to the next topic.
A very quick straw poll though, because we were all that generation, and dare I say it, that probably binge drinking a little bit.
What?
What you're talking about, Lindsay?
Do you not think that nowadays it's a lot more sensible?
Fewer people smoke. I feel like young people.
Oh, a load. They're very much more health conscious.
But also, young people can't afford to binge drink anymore because they're all on a lot less money. It's much harder for them to buy a house, and it's much easier. They basically rather spend their pennies on being vegan.
So very quickly, would you trade it? Because I wouldn't.
No.
I'm going to pass on that one.
Long live the old days.
The old binge drinking days.
All right. Well, from Lindsay's inspirational experiences being a binge drinker. I don't mean that really. I'm sure you, well, she's the kind of person that would probably have a few drinks the night before and turn up and still do a professional job the same day, just like producer Abby, who's been out at a Glitzy Awards ceremony.
I think
last night.
Abby and I can both say that some of our best work has been slightly hungover.
Oh, gosh. We do not advocate this at all if you're listening on Jack Radio at 4 o'clock. Anyway, let's talk about next some inspirational women. Yes, Annie and Aretha, sisters really are doing it for themselves. We like to chime this tune as well, don't we, on the Offside Rule. We're going to get empowered. We're going to give a bit of stick to the old men out there. No, we're not really. We're just going to celebrate some amazing women. That's because Sunday, 8th of March, is International Women's Day. So as an all-female podcast, we've got to highlight this in the Offside way. And we're just going to do this simply by mentioning a few names in football, women involved in football somehow, who you might not be aware of and some of the brilliant things that they do. Robin?
Well, everyone's going to be very much aware of this person because, for me personally, it's Jackie Oatley.
Yeah.
Because there were no female role models in that line of work. I didn't think it would be possible. You know, I listened to Jonathan Pierce, Alan Green, all were men. TV, radio, and Jackie Oatley showed that it was possible to actually do it. She was doing it, and she also did it under terrible circumstances as well.
And scrutiny
was ridiculous.
Did you actually read the articles at the time? Do you remember seeing her in the paper?
Not at the time, but I've spoken to her, you know, subsequently, and she's been a brilliant mentor for me. Even when I was nobody, just wanting to get into work, she spent the time with me, she emailed me, giving me advice. And then, yes, eventually when we became a bit closer, she did tell me what it was like, and it was awful. I don't think I would have coped with what she went through.
And I have to say to you, Robin, because I suppose there was strength in numbers because you and Vicky Sparks have come through together.
That's
I feel there's
helped,
been a little bit of female fraternity going on there. And I think that it was approached this time round a lot better.
Definitely.
But, I was spoken to about maybe doing it at one point, not so long after Jackie had done it. And it terrified me, the thought of being that next person to do it on your own.
And obviously, there was a whole debate during the World Cup in Russia involving Vicky Sparks, a completely needless debate about whether we were ready to hear women's voices, whether men could cope with hearing women's voices commentate, which is so ridiculous. Lindsay, I put you forward for a commentary job about 2.5-3 years ago, and the guy in charge, I won't name the company, the guy in charge said, yeah, but I don't think our male listeners are ready to hear a female voice yet, are they? And he just was such an off-the-cuff comment. And I was really taken aback by it because I was like, well, you know, this is only a few years ago. If you're not prepared to give it a go, and this, you know, is a major broadcast network, if you're not prepared to give it a go, then where? And this is like a 30-year-old-ish guy. So it's not, you know, this is someone who should be a lot more developed in terms of their brain space, in terms of welcoming women.
Well, on another, probably the same major network, I actually found out, and I didn't realise this, in December 2013, I had been knocking on the door for some time as a reporter going out covering matches. And I eventually did do a report for this station. And some people that worked there told me, and it was in my shock horror, that I was the first female to do a match report. So we're not talking commentary, we're talking reporting on matches for this network, December 2013.
Yeah. It was a different network, by the way, in case anyone's joining the dots and coming
It was
up
a different network. Yeah, okay, yeah. That's fine.
But thank God for Jackie, because I've said this before, she took a bullet basically for me and Vicky, because she was the first and she will always be the first. Mm. And I think a lot of people admire her for that, but and in retrospect, she gets a lot of respect for it. Yeah. But I think it should be recognised that at the time, she had a really, really tough experience.
I just wish that she was there with you now also doing it.
Me too. I don't know. I don't really understand why she isn't, to be honest. But she did commentary on the Women's World Cup for the World Feed.
And got so many plaudits for it. Yeah. The amount of people that spoke to me about
but
how great she did.
But why wasn't she on our major networks here in this country flying the flag for British women commentating?
She wasn't looked after properly. I've got to say, me and Vicky have been, as Lindsay alluded to, the fact that it's been two of us has taken the pressure off both of us, I feel anyway. Mm. Don't want to speak for Vicky, but the fact that we've been nurtured, we haven't been thrown in at the deep end. Mm. We've built it up very gradually, women's football, radio, TV, men's football, it's all been very gradual. So I can't speak highly enough of the BBC and how we've been looked
after. And the process, it's been managed properly this time.
Look, we are Jackie Oatley fans, we know her well, we respect her incredibly, and it's only right that she gets a mention. Well, Linz, before we move on to yours, I'll chip in with Susan Whelan, CEO of Leicester City. There are not enough women on boards when it comes to football-related activities. That's a huge area. In fact, I was at an event this weekend for Girls United with Cassie from Women in Football, and she was talking about this. There is a major gap in the market for women in high-ranking positions in football, and we all know that the organisations benefit when there are women on the board, and football still has to catch up with this. But all hail CEO of Leicester City, Susan Whelan. She's been there since 2011, so it's not like she's just come in as some sort of quota or some sort of let's get a woman into this role. She's been there from the club being a championship side to the very top of the Premier League and into Europe. And of course, she's, you know, been there whilst they're now on another resurgent period. Heavy focus on infrastructure and sustainability at the club. That is her big thing. Long-term growth is her big thing.
There still aren't enough women doing those sorts of roles,
Yeah, definitely. She's also led the club with major capital development projects, including their new training facility, which is going to open soon. I know there's plans for an extension of the King Power Stadium. So she's going in and completely bossing it. She's not known by many, actually. She's not one of those Karen Brady types who, you know, everyone mentions if you mention a woman in football first. But all hail from me to Susan Whelan from Leicester City.
There are too many when you look into this where there's the only, like Sian Massey being the only referee and lineswoman in the Premier League. Mm. That's not enough, in my opinion, in the top flight. When you consider that every single Premier League match now, you have four officials, you've got a fourth official. To have one isn't enough. You haven't got any at the moment in the whole of the EFL in the men's game, any female coaches. Head coaches. So that's another thing that needs addressing big style. And hopefully when we have this conversation again at some point, we'll be able to say some examples and they won't just be the only ones.
Yes.
Because that's the thing, you get accused of being of tokenism then, don't you? Well, yeah. she's the female.
Or just
of the group.
Being a bit of an experiment, you know, so and so's experimenting with you know, and you know, the female needs to be supported and needs to be there for a long time to make that work.
I think you were right as well when you said decision makers. And the reason why I've picked the person that I have is because it's a business person and it's someone at the top of the tree in that organisation. And I've gone for Sharona Friedman, who's actually in charge of UCFB, which is Universities for Football Business. You might have seen them up and down the country. You can go and study. It started originally in Burnley. There's Wembley Stadium. They have offices where you're overlooking the pitch at the Etihad. They've now expanded as well to Australia, and they've got two campuses that are going to be set up in the USA. And this is a Canadian woman who I very recently met, who I found very inspiring that she's set up this business. It makes so much sense to me because there are so many roles in football, and what she's doing is really driving hard to get more females coming through. They have around about 450 work placements across the world of football business that students can go on. And loads of those will then go on to become future leaders, future decision makers, and people that change policies. It doesn't have to always be coaching and on the pitch. There's lots of roles within football, I think, that people don't always see. Mm. So I think things like this are really important, and I'm really dot my cap to her, because I think to be able to start something like this from fresh was a real big gamble, yeah. but one that hopefully is paying off for her.
Can we just pay tribute as well to those people involved in getting girls' grassroots and women's football teams going, especially when we're thinking about International Women's Day and the legacy and the generations to come. Since the Women's World Cup, there's been 605 new girls' youth teams and 260 new women's clubs registered to play. That's
awesome.
An incredible amount. Mm. And that's an incredible amount of people, men and women, supporting girls and women playing football, very often for free. I also want to mention those championing LGBT and non-binary inclusion, like Gold Diggers. We had Shura on our women's football podcast the other week. Gold Diggers are one of many organisations doing that. And there's a running theme here when we're talking about setting up women's football teams and supporting people who want to coach. And that is that it's such a new explosion that many of the teams, I was reading about this in The Guardian, I think, a little while ago, Fleur Cousins, who's the founder of Gold Diggers, was saying, and echoing many other people, saying that because it's such a new thing, they can't secure space to play. They've got demand. They've got women signing up for football, enjoying playing football. It's making a difference to women and mums' lives. It's given them something outside the kids. It's given them something other than their job, perhaps. But at the moment, it can't be sustained because well-established men's teams are booking up pitch spaces. So in other words, when you've got a space that should be for everyone, you've got 22 men who've booked that for kind of 6 weeks in advance because they're more established, because they've got a bit more money behind them. They can afford to book up those spaces. Many of the pitches are on kind of a first come, first serve basis. And it means if you're a young team, you can't just book a pitch for next week. You are booked out by more established teams. So there is a huge call either for something to be done about the booking system or for more space for young girls and women to play football.
There is also a collaboration that can happen there with schools, surely. You know, you think of all the school facilities.
School facilities,
The way that should
be... A lot
be...
of schools do not have playing pitches anymore. It's a concrete surface in a playground.
Mm. That is such a shame that you'd lose potential brilliant female footballers or even just any footballers that want to play. It's just
because there isn't the space available.
That's really heartbreaking. Can I also pay tribute to, I know it's International Women's Day, but how important our male allies are as well.
In fact, I was talking about this a couple of days
ago.
They're
so important.
It's so important.
Because you feel like you're not alone and that you're being, there are men out there who supported.
Have you got any male allies who you want to mention?
Oh, loads. And they've mainly been on your show, really. Kieran Tavan being a big one for me.
Yeah.
He's always, and on Twitter, he's constantly calling out people.
So, women's football writer for The Athletic.
Yeah. And in real life as well, it's not just, he's not a keyboard warrior.
No.
He does everything. Like people like Tim Stillman, Rich Laverty, you know, just people who champion the game, but also champion us as well.
Mm. Mm. I completely agree. There are loads of events going on around the UK to celebrate International Women's Day across other sports as well. So if you can get involved, please do. And big up the ladies. Strike the pose. Okay, well, today, we're recording this on a Thursday, is World Book Day. My little one, Arthur's dressed up as Paddington Bear. I've shown you a picture of that.
A lovely Paddington Bear is too.
He loves it. Do you know, last year, he had an absolute rage on World Book Day. I'm sure, listen, World Book Day is the bane of many parents. A, because we shouldn't have to go out and buy something, but we often do because we don't have the time to make outfits, but also because it's so damn annoying, because often your child does not want to dress up, and if they do, it's something completely impossible.
I do sympathise for parents because I've got lots of friends that are always having this nightmare the night before.
scrambling around. Wondering if Prime do 3-hour delivery.
Yeah, trying to get an outfit out. And often, at least with this one, you can plan for it. But there's often so many other school days where they just throw something on you. Can you bring them
class.
In as an alien tomorrow?
Yeah. My daughter's class happened to have a school trip coinciding with World Book Day. So all these costumes have been prepared. They're going on a school trip. Where is the school trip? They're going to the local dump. So
that's not going to be confusing so for the people there.
That's not going to be strange, is it? When Harry Potter, Hermione,
Harry Potter
Paddington Bear, whoever else turns up at the dump. Anyway.
Well, I'm fresh from West Ham, from their World Book Day event. Which I went and did some filming with a couple of players there at a primary school in East London. they weren't in fancy dress because, of course,
I was disappointed to see that
today.
Photo.
That's okay. Today, isn't it? And it was the day before.
That the footballers should have been carrying the flag for the fancy dress.
But what it was all about, they had an author who's written a series of football books called Football Schools, and the illustrator was there, and they were doing some classes with the assembly. And I just love young people and how they have no filter and how they just decide to put anything forward. So they made the Key Stage 1 children put forward ideas for animals that could play in certain positions.
So these are kids up to the age of 7.
Oh, I like it.
It was really good.
Like Rhino on the wing.
Yes. So they had some excellent suggestions. So one girl put her hand up because they started with goalkeeper and said octopus because it's got 8 arms.
Love it.
A brilliant idea.
Genius.
Absolutely brilliant. Then they all got really into it. You know, a lion should be in defence because it's strong and all these things. And then you could tell that the illustrator just completely lost it at one point because they decided on a chameleon for a winger, and he was probably thinking, I don't know how to draw a chameleon. And also because the whole thing was invisibility and that it could go down the wing as a winger. But it was absolutely brilliant. Some of the suggestions coming up, a sloth as the coach, and you're thinking, why? What's their impression of coaches to suggest a sloth?
Very tactically astute sloths.
Well, let's extend this conversation further. I would like either footballers with connections to books and not autobiographies, not how to play football books. Okay, so random footballer book connections. Or do you have any footballers who you feel could double up as a fictional book character?
It's been touted before, I think, on other Totally shows. But Steve Bruce has written a collection of novels, I believe, detective novels, which never continues to amaze
me. These are ingenious, by the way. They're called Striker, Sweeper, Defender. It is a trilogy of books about a murder. The front cover of one is just utterly hilarious because it basically has a footballer on the ground in that kind of murdered pose with like a pool of blood.
Oh, the outline of
Well, it wasn't an outline. It is the actual dead
body.
Player.
Oh, Steve.
It is the actual murdered murdered player. It features Ledisford Town manager Steve Barnes. Steve Bruce, Steve Barnes, too close? Maybe. It basically charts the star forward of Ledisford, who's found stabbed to death in the changing rooms. Barnes, the manager, already a suspect, naturally tries to solve the case. That the books are filled with kidnappings, betrayal and suspense.
That's incredible. I mean, where does he find the time? Is it on the team bus, do you think, to away games?
Guys, these were done years
ago. It was in 1999.
Ago.
Apparently, the pièce de résistance is the fact that in the towards the end of the first book, a sniper shoots a football out from under the foot of Steve Barnes as he's standing in the technical area at the end of a game.
That's absurd.
Sniper at a football
but
game.
I want to read it.
Okay, so Robin's homework, you need to read or try and get, apparently they're very hard to get hold of now, Striker, Sweeper, Defender by Steve Bruce. Lindsay?
Frank Lampard had some books out.
He did.
But we're going to gloss over that because I think they're pretty well known now that he's done some books. Somebody you might not know who's written books is Mark Schwarzer. He used to be a goalkeeper for Chelsea and at Leicester City, Australian. And he's one of many. There are children's books out there that lots of different footballers have turned their hand to. But the reason why I wanted to pick this one out is because of the message within the book. So his own childhood, he's the son of German immigrants, Mark Schwarzer, and he made that a central theme to this book called Megs, and there's a series of books called Megs. And the first book, you have a character, Megs, who's moved to Australia from England as a kid, only to find football is a second-class sport there. And it really received credit, really, from all the people that reviewed these books for the way that it tackled immigration as one of the topics. And there's lots of other issues. I think he's had 5 or 6 books in total. So I wanted to mention his.
How about a couple that have nothing to do with football whatsoever? This is a bit of a tenuous link, but David Icke, of course, has written many books featured for Hereford United. Very controversial opinions, but the least controversial of which are his general theories about the fact that we're in the middle of a global conspiracy and that there are other people who are shape-shifting within our existence.
Family, lizards, well,
yes,
things
I
like
think that. That's the controversial bit. So we'll just gloss over that. But listen, I found an absolute beauty here for you girls. Oh, by the way, word in from producer Abby. You can get Striker, Steve Bruce's 1999 book, first of the trilogy, for £1,000 on Amazon.
Oh, that's a What?
Yes. Is that like the first edition signed book or something?
Well, as I said, these books are very sought after now, going through something of a resurgence, obviously. But anyway, I've basically found this book for you two. I'm just going to show you a picture. It's Francesco Totti.
Oh, Roman.
Wow.
And
that's
his guide to Rome. He's dressed as a Roman warrior.
Like gladiator.
Roman fighter, gladiator, yes.
300, you know that
He's
film?
Got a tiny little skirt on and nothing on his chest. And this is absolutely serious now. It's Francesco's Guide to Ancient Rome. I shan't say what the Italian title is. It is only available in Italian. Released in 2014. Still available on Amazon, by the way. It doesn't cost £1,000 either. The legendary player takes you on a historical sightseeing trip around Rome.
Wow.
Yes, exactly. Quick footballers as fictional characters. Fire some at me.
Okay. So I think that this player just suits this character so much. I don't know why. It must be their physique. It must be something about them. But I'm having Jamie Vardy as Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Okay.
Mm. Can you see that?
Yes.
All righty.
Fox in the box.
We've got Fox in the box. Plays for the Foxes.
Yeah.
Peter Crouch is the BFG on here. Jose Mourinho is Mr. Happy, although I feel like Jose Mourinho is more Heathcliff, that kind of tortured anti-hero whose rage consumes everything around him in Wuthering Heights. To the same note, Maurizio Pottacino, I feel like he could do a Mr. Darcy from Pride and Prejudice, archetypal aloof romantic hero, rocks up and sweeps everyone up in his sheer presence and masterfulness.
I'll finish off with Maradona would be the Mad Hatter.
Okay. Very good.
I think that's really good. I wanted a couple more. Keira Walsh, I've picked her as a lioness, as Tinkerbell. I just think she'd
suit
that. Oh,
yeah, nice.
And then Troy Deeney, after working with Anthony Joshua's trainer and everything, doesn't apply anymore, but predated. It was the Hungry Caterpillar.
Well, you could apply that to a lot of footballers, couldn't you? Check out Twitter, by the way, as well. A lot of clubs are tweeting their footballers reading books. Or in Crystal Palace's case with Rydervald, he's just reading a programme rather than an actual book. Not sure that really counts. All right, just before we end, let's go to any other business. Well, as ever, some of the week's smaller stories, a few little nuggets from you, if you don't mind. Robin Cowan, let's go to you first.
Well, I think most people must have seen this, but it's in the category of there's something in my eye, the Ben Foster social media video of him making a little girl's dream come true. And what a game to do it in, that Watford against Liverpool game.
Thank you very much for reminding
me. I was at that match.
Oh, yeah. Amazing. And
it was such a great game to be at. I didn't predict, obviously, that Watford would be the club to do it. But what I did say was that if ever Liverpool was stopped on this charge, it would be by an unexpected team, which it was.
Are you claiming that victory, basically?
No.
Okay.
No.
It was a little girl, wasn't it? Cool. Was it Molly? I'm trying to remember from seeing. And I did watch the whole video through because it was lovely. She was in a wheelchair and he wheeled her out onto the pitch. She was a mascot. She also got loads of great stuff. She got signatures from her favourite
Watford
players.
Wasn't his comment brilliant as well? He was like, oh, we're going to leave tyre marks on the track. We're going to leave tyre marks on the pitch. You're going to be able to see those and think that was me.
Yeah, it was an amazing video, wasn't it? Really lovely to see.
Yeah, scenes of him just sitting around with the family and saying, we're going to do this. It's just, what a top guy.
Yeah. Lindsay?
I'm going to go with my club Wolves and the fact that a few days ago, if you follow Wolves on Twitter, you'll have seen that the iconic badge suddenly disappeared. They took the wolf out of the badge, one of the best, if you ask me, if not the best, up and down world football. And it was the renowned wolf had disappeared. And I suppose it got everybody thinking why, which is a lot of these social media campaigns, this is how they're so effective, because you just do something and then everyone's being quite quizzical about it, including producer Abby, who was wondering and sending me a message, what's going on with Wolves' badge? It was all to raise awareness for World Wildlife Day. So they removed it because they were trying to say, imagine the world without the wildlife, without the animals.
Very clever. I like that.
Liked it very much indeed.
Not much from me, but only to say, still playing international football at the age of 42 for Maiga. She plays for Brazil. She's just played a match recently. If all goes well, she's injury free. She'll play in her 7th Olympics this summer in Japan for Brazil. So a little nod to another inspirational woman and a player playing at 42.
I'm also looking forward to seeing Casey Stoney and Kelly Smith play in Soccer Aid. That's been announced. So I can't wait. Although Casey did tweet saying, I hope I'm not caught in a foot race with Usain Bolt.
Well, she definitely still keeps herself in check, the Manchester United women manager, Casey Stoney. All right, we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you so much for joining me. What's next on the agenda for both of you?
Wolves against Brighton for me this weekend.
I will see you there.
Oh, nice. That's brilliant.
A little bit of an Offside Rule pod reunion. I feel left out not being there, but have a wonderful time. Lindsay, I know I'll see you again next week. Robin, we'll see you again very soon.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Don't forget you can check us out at Offside Rule Pod for all matters on social for the Offside Rule. You can check out our weekend wanderings and many other delicious articles. There's some She Believes International Women's Football action on there as well, actually. OffsideRulePodcast.com.
Keep those reviews coming as well. It's been great reading those.
Yes. We're also, by the way, supporting the Same Goals campaign from Manchester City, where every single girl who scores or saves a goal, if you video it, if you're a parent listening to this or you've got niece or nephew or friends, video a girl scoring or saving a goal, send it to Manchester City, have a look at their Twitter feed. Every single video, the girl gets a free limited edition Puma football.
Not only that, if you actually put at Offside Rule Pod and include us on it, you then go into a draw as well to win a signed Steph Horton shirt.
Could one of you film me?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Penalty,
yes.
Please.
We need to do ours as well. Thank you for listening, folks, and we'll see you again next week.